Progress recording. Okay, today is September 23rd, 2020. My name is Ellie Dossler. I'm talking with Dennis Hodzik. We're going to talk about Dennis's experiences since the start of the coronavirus pandemic in March of 2020. So Dennis, I'll just start asking you to sort of introduce yourself, describe what your daily life is like these days. We'll start there.
Yeah, so like you said, I'm Dennis Hodzik. I am a teacher for Warren County Public Schools. I currently teach at Warren East High School, where I teach all different types of science. This year I'm teaching chemistry, teaching integrated science, and teaching introduction to chemistry and physics. I've been a teacher now for 4 years. 2 years I taught at Western. I taught anatomy and biology at Western while I was in grad school. And then last year I taught at South Warren High School, where I taught physics and astronomy. And this year I'm at Warren East. I also serve as the assistant varsity soccer coach at Warren East High School and the junior varsity head coach, in addition to also being a full-time graduate student. So I wear a lot of hats. Also try to be a good son, a good brother, a good friend, a good boyfriend, just a general good person throughout all of these endeavors and these walks of life. So that's just a little bit about me.
Okay. So as, like you said, you're a science teacher. I can imagine that teaching looks a little different now than it did, you know, this time last year. How does your work as a teacher compare now to what it was like before
the start of COVID? It's very challenging because at the present moment, I feel as if I'm not teaching. I feel as if more I'm facilitating, or I'm attempting to facilitate, and or, it sounds bad when I say it this way, but and or babysitting in some ways, in some capacities. Students that are coming into class, what I've seen so far for the first 4 to 5 weeks that we have been in session with this hybrid schedule that Warren County is doing, is students got used to being on the NTI form that Warren County Public Schools had us do from March all the way through the beginning of May. And then, of course, they were on summer break. Mm-hmm. Then they were out for most of August. And they were out of school for basically 5 to 6 months. Mm-hmm. With very little structure, very little routine of any kind. And they have forgotten what it is like to be a student. Not that they knew in terms of, you know, from the way that I would define it, not that they had a great idea of what being a student meant in the first place. Before COVID, a lot of our students, what I was exposed to, struggled with, of course, you know, delayed gratification, structuring their time. Before COVID, COVID hit, it's gotten even worse. Currently, you know, on this hybrid schedule, I see my students twice a week. And the other 5 days, they are supposed to be doing assignments at home, watching video lectures, watching crash course videos that I record of myself with a voiceover on a PowerPoint, or doing things that are a bit more interactive, maybe an ed puzzle, which asks them formative questions during the presentation, maybe a Padlet, maybe other forms of technology that are available to us now. But when they come to class, they're supposed to come with questions, ready to ask, ready to talk about those concepts that we covered. What I'm finding is most students aren't even doing the assignments. They're simply just not doing them. I have one class in which 75% of my students are failing.
Wow.
And it is an entry-level course, be it sophomores, juniors, seniors, freshmen, doesn't matter really the age. Strong students are somehow students who had already had a generally very pervasive sense of self-responsibility, personal responsibility. They're somehow staying grounded in this, and they're staying on task, on topic, and getting their assignments done. But those who are struggling, or maybe just considered quote-unquote average to begin with, they're not doing well at all. A big thing that we're seeing, too, is a discrepancy in technology access and internet access. A lot of teachers have switched to having a learning management system as their primary delivery for their assignments, like Google Classroom. And you'll post your assignments on Google Classroom. You have your students do the assignments on Google Classroom. You'll grade it through Google Classroom, and then you post your grades in Infinite Campus. There's a huge learning discrepancy, a huge learning curve there for students to use Google Classroom, even though ease of use is not terribly hard. It's not ridiculously hard to use. There's a general apathy that students have towards school because they got used for five to six months, basically having 5 to 6 months worth of unstructured free time. I can wake up at 12 if I want to, stay up till 4 a.m. on TikTok and Snapchat, Facebook and Twitter, and whatever other form of social media they use, Instagram, and don't have to answer to anybody for it. Do whatever I want, whenever I want, and I'll do an assignment or two here or there just to keep my grade afloat, and then I'll get passed on. We are paying for those sins now as a faculty and staff at Warren East, and I think we're seeing it throughout all of Warren County, and I would estimate that we're seeing it all throughout Kentucky now. I can't speak to other states, but that's what I would estimate, and it's very challenging. It's very challenging.
Mm-hmm. How does that make you feel as a teacher? You said you've seen a lot of your students who are struggling to succeed, and you feel like you know why. But you said you feel like you're more like a facilitator or a babysitter than as a teacher. Can you speak more about that? What does that feel like?
It doesn't feel good. And one thing that I try to do for myself personally is I try to compartmentalize, and I try to say, okay, listen, their brains, in terms of their development, their prefrontal cortices are just not developed enough to be able to say, I'm going to delay my gratification and say, okay, I'm not going to lose 2 hours sitting down doing nothing, you know, watching TikTok videos. It's going to be, no, I really need to sit and do this assignment and have a sense of self-responsibility. I really try to do that, but it's difficult when you have such a pervasive apathy from them as well. It weighs on you. It weighs on your psyche. And you're saying, man, I'm trying all these things. I'm trying to talk to you. I'm trying to do the things that I know I need to do. I'm trying to facilitate good classroom discourse and discussion. I'm trying to differentiate. Maybe you need a little bit more intervention. Maybe you need a little less intervention. I'm trying to do these things, but I'm getting nothing back. You're not talking to me. It's difficult. We spent the first, I know in my classes, our administration told us at East that we were supposed to spend about the first 2 weeks of our class time with our students on trying to foster and develop relationships with them so they can have a sense of understanding and comfort when they come to school. Maybe they know who their teachers are, that they're welcome there, that we want them there. I didn't start content until about a week and a half into school. And that content I started was basic stuff. It was like safety, because I'm a science teacher. We just have to talk about safety. Right. You know, don't set your hair on fire. Here's where the fire extinguisher is. You know, eye wash station is here. That's not even really content to me. That's just general things, you know, procedures you have to go over. And then you start content 2 weeks in, and it's kind of been like, okay, you know, we're supposed to be getting used to this hybrid schedule, but students on the days that they're off are not sleeping on the times that they should be, right? They're not going to bed at a reasonable hour. So stay up till 4 a.m. on a school night. I got to be up in 2 hours, come to school. Well, now I'm tired. Now I can't pay attention. Now I have no attention span. Not paying attention while I'm here either. Go home. Don't do the assignments. Forget about them. No organization. It weighs on you as a teacher. It really, really does. So far it has. Now today, I can say that one of my more difficult classes just happened to be today that I feel like I'm approaching a breakthrough. I took the time to model for them exactly how they should check Google Classroom, check for their assignments, check to make sure that they're submitting their assignments, and then how to check for their grades. I had a lot of students who didn't even know how to check their grades in Infinite Canvas. That was an issue. We have students who are turning stuff in, but they're turning in assignments blank through the digital learning system. It's the equivalent of me giving you a paper copy, you just writing your name on it and saying, here you go, Coach Odzik. I'm done. No, so-and-so, like, you turned something in, but you didn't actually do it. So when I hand it back to you, or when I send it back to you, actually go back and fix it so I can get it graded for you so we can see if you're actually learning anything. I think what we're seeing is, you know, ideally in education, what you want your students to do is master content, not just perform it for achievement purposes and receiving grades. I'm feeling that we are slowly sinking into an achievement matrix in the sense that we're just trying to get students their grades so it can be meet the appearance that they're learning stuff, but in reality, they're not really learning much. And I'm seeing that. I'm seeing that my students aren't really learning, not necessarily by any deficiencies of it within the curriculum or within the way it's being delivered, but in the sense that they're not actually attempting to learn it for mastery. If they're doing it, they're doing it just to meet and check that box and say, yeah, I got it done, or yeah, I turned that in. That way they can go about doing whatever they want. And I see that it weighs on me too, because, you know, every teacher, regardless of the subject area, you want your student to be able to master your content or your curriculum, like math, social studies, whatever, art, science, English. You want them to be able to master the content and learn these skills for lifelong use, not just, well, let me memorize them or, you know, regurgitate them for a short term period and that's it, then they're gone. It's weighing. I think we just have to be persistent and try to, you know, provide them the structure, help them structure their days, help them get organized, help them understand how to use Google Classroom and learning management systems, mm-hmm. How to check their grades, and knowing that they can always talk to your teacher. I'm not some foreign entity that you have no way to identify with. Like, I'm here for you guys. I'm here to help you. I'm here for you. I want you to talk to me. Tell me about how your day went. Tell me what's going on at home. If you're working, tell me how work's going. Are they making you work on your off days? You know, and if you don't want to talk about that, that's okay. But I'm still here for you if you want to talk about it. Breaking down those maybe those barriers for some of them, maybe we'll get them involved a bit more, and then you can get through them better. And that's been a big challenge so far, because I've been in class for 5 weeks now. Well, I've only seen the students now, the group that I had today, I've only seen 10 full times, but I've been at work for 5 weeks. So that's what makes it a challenge there too, with the hybrid scheduling.
Yeah. What is your support system like as a teacher?
So on a personal level, I have my girlfriend. She's excellent. I have my uncle, my mother, my family. Even though I live alone, and sometimes it can be hard, my girlfriend and I, we're in a long-distance relationship. My uncle is in Bowling Green. My mom is in Bowling Green. I have a little brother. He's here as well. He's a freshman this year, and he's doing the online Ingenuity, so he's not even in school. So I have them. I have friends that I don't see as much as I would like to, but I still have friends, and they'll check in every now and then. I have a buddy who lives in Atlanta. He's excellent. I mean, we talk every day, and I vent to him, and we vent to each other about issues, and we'll talk philosophy, and we'll talk, you know, current status in America, and, you know, what can we do, and we'll brainstorm ideas and bounce ideas off each other. I don't know. Without my buddy Elvis, who's down in Atlanta right now, I don't know if I'd be sane, because he's kind of in the same box. He's working from home. He's an accountant, mm-hmm. and he hasn't seen anybody in like 7 months other than his mom and dad when he comes back to Bowling Green, and then his fiance. Like, he's kind of stuck at home too, so we're each other's, I guess, lifelines to some semblance of a social life. But that's my personal support system. At work, I can't speak highly enough about the people that I work with at Warren East. I didn't know what to expect switching from South Warren to Warren East. I kind of had an idea of what I had at South Warren, because that's where I did my observations while I was in graduate school, getting my hours in for being in different classrooms. So I knew what to expect with the teachers there. With South Warren, it was a known entity. With Warren East, I wasn't really sure. I knew some of the administrators. Mr. Vaughn, the administrator there, was one of the teachers at Bowling Green High School when I was in high school. So I knew him. I knew one of the counselors, Ms. Krischer. She was my counselor when I was in high school. I knew a couple of the teachers who were once at Bowling Green High School who are now at Warren East. So I had a little bit of an idea of the environment. I just didn't know until, of course, I started working there. And I can't speak highly enough about our staff. I mean, everyone is just about as supportive as they can be. Whether it's, and I'm sorry, I'm just not getting home. So if it sputs out for a second, forgive me. But everybody is just about as supportive as they can be. They're very understanding, encouraging. We have vent sessions to each other all the time about, you know, here's what I'm experiencing, here's what I'm seeing, here's what I think we can do. And just being there for each other, just in terms of a social support system, I think it's been invaluable at work. And then we have our Fridays. We have time to work on Fridays to where we can plan out the next week, do a lot of grading, contact parents, contact students who are not doing well, and meet as a department within your respective department. You can get together and say, okay, what's working well, what's not working well, what can we do with our assessments to change our assessments, you know, what's our plan for the next week.
that type of stuff. And so that's been invaluable, particularly at East. I'm very pleased with our support system at Warren East High School. It's been excellent.
You were talking about your personal support system with your friends and your girlfriend and these relationships that are sort of long distance. How does, well, I guess, how long have those relationships been long distance, and how does that compare now as to, you know, back before March?
So my girlfriend and I have been in a long distance relationship for almost 5 years now. It'll be 5 years in March. It's always been challenging, to be honest. But I think with COVID, it's been a bit more challenging in the sense that we try to see each other. That we didn't get a chance to do because national parks are closed, or you can't fly, or hotels are, you know, shutting down. And so that's kind of been, you know, a challenge. Now, of course, things are slowly starting to open back up. So we're getting to see each other a little bit more now, which is good. My friends, though, I'm a very social person. I love being around my friends, especially now living on myself. By myself, I have the space to host, have them over, to go do stuff. Don't really get to do much of that. Haven't really gotten to do much of that in the past. I think from mid-February all the way through the end of May, I think I had one person come over one time. Everything else was maybe digital communication, text messaging, group messaging. Occasionally, I'm not much of a video gamer, but my brother likes to play video games. Occasionally, he would invite me to, hey, please, Dennis, come on, play with me. And so I would get on, and I'd get on a gaming console and play a little bit with him. And then one of my friends would join in, and we'd catch up a little bit there. But it was a lot less frequent. I lost contact with people that I considered myself very close with after I moved out. I moved into my new apartment, the apartment that I'm in currently. I moved in right at the beginning of January of this year. And in doing that, you kind of see people kind of go on their own ways maybe, but COVID, I feel like, definitely exacerbated or accelerated the process of maybe people just drifting apart. You kind of lose contact with some people, and then they come back for a little bit, and then they don't. I don't know. It's been an interesting dynamic for sure, just to see how that's all developed. But now that things are slowly starting to change, I guess the stigma is shifting. If I invite some friends over, they'll come, and you know, it'll be fine. A couple people here and there, don't need to throw, you know, like a huge party or something like that. I was never into that type of stuff anyway. So it's getting better. I think we're learning to live with it, and we're learning, okay, we truly are social creatures. We cannot exist without social interaction. And so the people that you want in your life the most are the people that, you know, come to mind whenever this type of stuff comes up. You want those people around. So let's do what we can to keep those relationships alive. And I am starting to see that now in a lot of ways with a good number of my friends.
You say, let's do what we can to keep those relationships alive. What can you do?
Effort. Mm-hmm. Effort is reciprocated. So of course this is somewhat subjective, but if I feel like you're making an effort, then I'm going to make an effort too. But if I feel like you blow me off in 3 months and I haven't heard from you once, but I've called you, sent you messages, invited you over, and you don't even reply, that's kind of showing me that you're just not interested. Maybe you're dealing with stuff. Maybe stuff's going on at home. I don't know, but I can't know if you don't talk to me, you know? So just effort. So like my buddy Elvis, I mean, he works for an accountancy firm. I don't think that there's been a day since maybe there's not been two consecutive days in which him and I have not spoken together. And I can't remember how long. It's all about effort. And he works sometimes 80-hour weeks, 100-hour weeks, 60-hour weeks on a consistent basis. He has a fiance at home. there's a saying in Bosnian that my mom always used to teach me, sve se može kad se hoće, which essentially means, if you want to, you'll do it. You know, if you want to make time, you will. It's as simple as that. Just the same way that I wanted to be on this call with you today. So driving home from school, I hopped on at 3 o'clock. I didn't say, hey, Ellie, I have to blow you off for about half an hour. You know, like I wanted to meet that deadline. I would say, okay, at 3 o'clock, I'm in the car. My hands are on the steering wheel. I'm going to set the phone up on the dash. I'm going to make that call. Same thing with my mom. If I'm driving home, maybe I'm driving to work, I'll give her a call quick, 5-10 minutes. Hey, mom, how's the last few days been? Or one of my buddies, you know, send a text message. If maybe they're at work and they're in a meeting, they can't talk on the phone, so send a text message. Social media sometimes is good for that. I'm not a big user of social media, but like sometimes you send a Snapchat, be like, hey, look what I see this morning, like on my way to work, you know, something like that. So you do what you can to keep those relationships alive, but effort, the biggest thing is effort. It's effort has to be reciprocated, and you can have understanding, but if I'm contacting and contacting and contacting and you're just not reciprocating that same effort, I'm going to stop making that effort that I'm making. That's just the way it boils down.
Mm-hmm. So for your friends who, like with Elvis, where you talk a lot, what do y'all talk about?
We talk about everything. We can talk, him and I, we can talk together for hours at a time. I'm sure we have had interesting conversations in about all different types of things, philosophy, you know, current events, politics, science, work. Like he'll tell me about, you know, the complex, you know, legal ramifications of the things that the Congress has done and how it's affecting tax and all these other things. And it's just like, yeah, you know, we'll talk about that. I mean, I'm not an accountant, but yeah, I'll learn something from you about it. Just everything, anything you can think of, religion, general stuff, you know, sports. Sometimes he's not that into sports. I am into sports, but you know, sometimes he'll listen to me drone on about sports, just whatever it is, you know, stuff that is easy to talk about will come naturally too. You know, we'll talk about personal life. We'll talk about my girlfriend. He'll talk about his fiance. We'll talk about future plans. And, you know, I don't think there's a single subject at one point that we haven't touched, and that may be hyperbolic, but that, we have talked about so many things and had so many countless hours of conversation, and there's not been a single second of it that either one of us have not enjoyed. So,
yeah, I was going to ask, what's it like to have someone who you know you can share those kinds of conversations with?
It's excellent. Honestly, I don't know where I'd be. I would have probably gone crazy if it wasn't for him. And maybe I don't want to seem presumptuous, but maybe I can say the same thing for him. If he didn't have me, maybe he would have gone crazy. At least he has his fiance at home. That's different. You know, he can talk to her and, you know, be around her. But at a certain point, you know, there's got to be another type of interaction. I had my interaction with my coworkers. Mm-hmm. And so that provided me some sort of social structure. Still, where he's working from home 100%. He's working completely digitally. So the only interaction he has with people outside of his fiance is through a phone on calls. Like, there's no social interaction there, really, not much, especially if it's all work related. So it's been nice. So I owe him a insurmountable debt that, you know, I'm for sure going to be repaying many times over.
You mentioned that your coworkers give you some, you know, regular in-person interaction. And earlier you mentioned that y'all have vent sessions on.
Yeah.
What do you talk with your coworkers about?
We'll talk about general issues that we're seeing with school, with students, you know, like how can we get them to, we try to problem solve as much as we can, but this period in our history is unprecedented. There's nobody alive that has ever dealt with something like this. Even people that lived through the last major pandemic, you know, the Spanish influenza in 1918, I think. Yeah. Nobody's alive that remembers that. So we don't, all of our learning strategies, all of our teacher education and pedagogy textbooks, nothing has prepared the education systems of the world, not just the United States, for something like this. And there is no really good answer that any of us have. We try and we try, we do what we can, and we look for support from parents. But the biggest thing that we have is is the support of each other, having each other's backs. And so if I have an issue, I'll go to a colleague and I'll ask them what they think, and we'll try to brainstorm a possible solution, or we'll just talk about it and just get it off of our chests so it doesn't weigh as heavily. And that's big. And then with your colleagues too, like, I mean, I'd be remiss to say that with your colleagues, you don't make friends with them too. You know, like, you talk about personal things with them too. Like, hey, you know, my fiance or my wife, or I saw this, my brother did this, or, you know, with my parents, I'm going to go see my parents, or I'm having a baby, or, you know, these things come up. So, that helps too, to give some sense of a social structure. That is, I feel like I've been fortunate enough to have a job throughout the pandemic to where I have not been impacted as much socially as so many other countless people have. I have not been socially isolated and alone. I have not, at times, maybe fleeting moments, I feel like that, but then I try to find perspective and say, listen, you have a job, you know, you're safe, you're healthy, your family is healthy. There are millions of others that are not in your position. Just be thankful for what you have, and, you know, you'll get through it, whatever it is. So that's helped. But definitely coworkers, they help too. They help having them there and being able to talk to them about various issues.
Mm-hmm. You said that you'll also be looking for support from parents. What is it like working with parents as well as your students right now?
Fortunately, I have not had a single negative interaction with a parent at the moment. I think we're in a state in which people are just trying to figure out how to live and make it as normal as possible. And they're being generally more understanding. Unfortunately, we have states of civil and social unrest. We have stigmas that are associated with wearing and or not wearing masks, and all of the misinformation, lack of education on the scientific front from the general public, and how the media is intricately interplayed within that. Parents, so far, my interaction with parents is that they have been understanding and they're being generally supportive, which is helpful. However, in terms of what's going on with them at home, I can't speak to that. I would love to assume that parents are being as supportive of their students as they can and saying, okay, let's check your grades. Let's see what you got at home. But what I'm seeing in the classroom is, if I've got one class of 75% of students are failing, that tells me that somebody at home is not maybe, or it could be one possible explanation. Maybe they're just not checking. So are they busy? Are they working multiple jobs? Do they just not care? I don't know. Am I not hearing from them because it's apathy on their part as well? Or am I not hearing from them because there's nothing to really talk about? You know, some parents have reached out. We've emailed. I've called some parents. I talked to a parent today. Mm-hmm. Had a meeting about one of my students today. She was sweet. She was nice, well-spoken, and generally supportive. You know, thank you so much for helping out. We understand you guys are in a very tough position as teachers and as educators right now, just doing what you can, as much as you can, you know, to help raise our kids. She was very appreciative. You know, part of me fears that we will have, that this generation that is going through high school currently will be affected to such a degree that they might even be, that they could be considered as like, almost like a lost generation, because so many of them were already impacted to a negative degree by social media addiction, internet addiction, and these things that are now becoming even more pervasive because of COVID and lack of, you know, schooling structure and lack of intervention on parts of school systems and parents, which otherwise normally would have been in place if the conditions were normal. So my experience so far has been one that, in my interactions with parents, whether it have been through email or in person or on the phone, they have been pleasant. So I have not had a parent, you know, try to ostracize me in any way or berate me, you know, for why is my baby failing? Well, your baby's failing because your baby's not doing the work. but yeah, so hopefully that will continue, and hopefully they will continue to be understanding.
Mm-hmm. You've spoken some about this already, but you said that you kind of fear that this generation is might become a lost generation, that they're really going through something. What do you see as is your responsibility as a teacher in working with this generation of high schoolers, your students?
The responsibility seems to be growing by the minute. And that's part of what weighs on you as an educator, because you've already got so many different hats you have to wear. And now you're trying to intervene and prevent that from happening, that lost generation thing from happening. So for me, especially being a science teacher, one thing that I believe that is, you know, especially considering our political climate and social climate, we are seeing a huge lack of science education and critical analysis and reasoning skills. And I can't turn every one of my students into a scientist. It's not going to happen. But can I give them an appreciation for the content? Can I have them understand what it means to deductively reason and to dissect arguments and to be able to present logical, cohesive reasoning, not just absorb what I'm seeing on Twitter and regurgitate it and, you know, spit out a bunch of platitudes and then that's what I think without any form of cognitive thought involved whatsoever. The more and more I see that students are doing those things, the more and more I want to try and say, stop. And that's where I feel like we have a strong responsibility today, is to try to keep students from slipping into those bad habits of taking what they see on TikTok or Snapchat or Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or wherever else, and just taking it at face value and absorbing it and saying, yep, that's what I think. Mm-hmm. I want to teach you how to think. I want to teach you how to be a student. I want to teach you how to reason and critically think and analyze. That's my largest responsibility, not just to make you scientifically literate, but to teach you how to think. Because where things are going, it's not looking good. And that's the future of our country, you know? So we've never had to my knowledge, of course, just because of the way that technology has advanced, there's no historical precedent for this. Of course, I'm sure if you go to any period in history, then, you know, there'll be some type of, oh, it's Armageddon, you know, it's, you know, but generally speaking, things are getting better on a historical basis. You know, life expectancy is longer. We're not having to deal with slavery. That's not a thing. You know, people have their voting rights. People have civil rights, which is a good thing. So on the aggregate, we're doing better as a species. And of course, there's always, you know, there's always the next frontier. How can we do better? But I think for students, the fight now is getting them to be able to think and reason when so much of what they're surrounded by is instant gratification. I don't need to think. I don't need to reason if I can just go to Google and it'll tell me in 2 seconds what to think. Or if I can just go to Twitter and I'm constantly being spoon-fed information that'll just tell me what to think and believe. Whatever it may be. The onus is not on me to perform. The onus is not on me to concoct arguments, whereas maybe it used to be, you know? I don't know. But that's where I feel like is the big, big, big challenge right now.
What do you mean by concoct arguments? You said that used to be something that you felt like you needed to do. What do you mean by that? Why do you feel like that's not what you're doing now?
Well, no, as a student.
Oh, as a student.
Yeah, as a student, yeah. I'm sorry if it wasn't clear there.
No, that's fine. It's my fault. Okay. So if we could kind of pivot a little bit, talking about another one of the many, many hats that you wear. You're also a soccer coach, you mentioned. What's that like? What's coaching soccer like?
It's fun. It's fun. It's rewarding. It's challenging. Particularly with some of my students at East. And so, of course, without naming any names, you see definitely a discrepancy in some of the students that I taught last year versus the students that I'm teaching this year or the students that I'm coaching this year. And just how much having security matters. We have talented players, but they're not a team. And if they play, they're playing not for each other. They're playing for personal satisfaction. They want to play because they want to score 4 goals, or they want to play because they want to make themselves look good. I've been on teams before. I've been around teams before. The best teams play selfless soccer. They play together. They know what they're supposed to be doing. They're covering for each other. They're working together. No individual is above the team. We have a team of individuals who are talented kids. They have potential, but we have not been able to form a concrete identity. Part of that is because our offseason was significantly truncated because of COVID restrictions and uncertainty from the governor's office and KHSAA on how practices were going to look like. Part of that was because they just aren't in shape. Their fitness level is significantly hindered by, you know, eating like crap for 6 months, sitting at home doing nothing, or having to work a lot of hours to support their families. I have a lot of that too. I have students who work construction, students who do roofing, who are in high school. So leave school and they have to go do roofing to work at night when it's not super hot. And it's tough. It's really, really tough to form a team and to get them to play for each other. When it's clicking, it's awesome. When it doesn't click, it's very frustrating and makes you feel defeated almost, in more sense of more than just the sense of a scoreline. It makes you feel defeated in the sense that your hands are tied, because ideally I could set all these kids up in perfect situations in which they don't have to worry about money. They're all middle-class families, you know, and they don't have to worry about working after school unless it's just for general spending money on their own basis. They don't have to worry about supporting their families. They can play club soccer. They can be fit year round. They can play for Sky here. They can play for BG Elite and keep their fitness level up. Then they'll learn how they play with each other. And then when it comes to school time, then it's a well-oiled machine, you know, or we just have to do a couple things. We have to tweak some techniques here. We have to implement new formations and tactics, but you guys know how to play. You're in shape. You don't have injuries. You're not worrying about these other considerations. This year's been tough. This year's been tough in that regard. So I wish that I could do more in that front, but you feel like your hands are tied because there's only so much you can do.
Why do you feel like your hands are tied?
Some of those challenges that our players in particular are facing, there's very little that you can do to help them rectify that situation. You wish that there were scholarships or grants that could, you know, support them to not have to worry about working 45 hours a week as a high school student and worry about school and then worry about practice. I've got students who don't show up to practice who then try to come play at the games. And you have students who come to practices who don't show up to games. And you've got students who you don't know if they're going to show up. And you got students who are academically ineligible because they're failing three or more classes. It's stressful from the team perspective, because for the players that do care, it makes it seem like those who aren't meeting the bar, they just don't care. They're selfish. They're not sacrificing for the team. And it's tough to build a team identity. And it's very hard to overcome that. Because if somebody's inherently selfish with their goals, it's not necessarily wrong to want to do things to inflate your ego. But if that's the only thing that you're doing, people can see through it. Even kids in middle school can see through that, let alone high school kids and adults. So I think that's a challenge that we are currently facing at Warren East. Some of the other high schools, I don't know. I'm good friends with some of the other coaches around, or maybe not good friends, but I've known them for a while. And I would hope that this is only a temporary thing. But it is definitely challenging, and it weighs on you, because you want to remove those barriers for these kids. You want to say, okay, listen, you love soccer. We're going to get you to play. Don't worry about work. Don't worry about money. Don't worry about, you know, getting a physical. Don't worry about finding a ride because you don't have a car or because your parents can't get you to practice because they have to work four jobs to support the family. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about that stuff. We'll find a way. You can't. There's rules in place, and you want to be generous as you can, but we don't have unlimited resources, unfortunately, you know, so yeah. That's where it's tough.
What can you do, or what do you do to support your kids as much as possible?
You get them, get your teammates, get their teammates, excuse me, to chip in as much as they can in terms of social support. So, you know, check in on them. Do they need a ride? You know, are they doing their assignments? Do you need a ride to get your physical? Don't forget, you know, this is what we're wearing tonight to this game. you know, see if the other parents can help out, you know, if they're okay with it, if the rules are okay with it. Sometimes people are just generous, you know, and that's what you can do. Get them water, you know, just be a shoulder for them to lean on just in case they need some support, you know, throw the machoism aside. And, you know, if there's any sense of it, the toxic masculinity, like throw that to the side for a second and just talk to me, you know, like what's going on. Just be somebody that they can confide in, that they can see an example in, you know, the way that you carry yourself, the way that you talk to them, and the way that you interact with them can help show them you're modeling for them how you want them to interact and talk with you, you know, and then maybe they're little brothers or just being in that sense, maybe just a good person. These are the ways we try to intervene and help out. I mean, in terms of money, there's only so much we can do, but, and that seems to be a big problem sometimes just with some of these kids who are less well off than maybe some others. But, that might be the largest obstacle. It's just time. And with that time that they have, they're using that time to go to work or, make extra money on the side for the family. So you do what you can outside of that, but anything else, it's we'll see what happens. You know, maybe time will help, and who knows, maybe they strike gold, I don't know. But that's generally about it.
What about your family? How's your family doing?
So my mom works from home, and she's worked from home now for 12 years or something like that. So she sees everybody in the house over there, and that's about it. Whenever, if she goes out anywhere, I don't know if she does. I mean, maybe she goes out to the grocery store occasionally once in a while, but I know she's been doing like delivery for groceries and stuff like that. I know sometimes she goes out to the park. She'll go in the park, but I would assume that she's doing okay based on what she tells me. I mean, people like to portray a strong outward image, and so it takes some time to peel back those layers. And let's be honest, parents don't usually like to confide in their children. But I would assume she's doing okay. She tells me she's doing okay. I like to think she's doing okay. I haven't really seen her and had much interaction time with her since about mid-February as well.
No.
So that's been a little tough. And we don't live all that far away. I mean, we're both here at Bowling Green. So my brother, I have not actually gotten to go and do anything with my brother since about mid-February.
Wow.
Yeah, and he's a freshman this year, so.
Is he a freshman at Western or in high school?
No, he's in high school. Okay. Yeah. And his high school experience so far, all he knows is Ingenuity online courses. So he's not even doing our Warren County curriculum. And I think he's got somebody at, because he started at Greenwood.
Yeah.
So he's got somebody that he's facilitated with that checks in on him, I think, either daily or weekly from Greenwood High School, but he doesn't know any of his would-be teachers in English 1 or whatever science class, whatever math class that he would have taken. So he's just doing the Ingenuity thing. So, yeah, my uncle I see from time to time. He checks in on me. He calls me. I go and I see him. He's a bit more exposed in terms of risk, I guess, because he works at Fruit of the Loom. So he's around more people all the time. So he takes way more precautionary measures when he's at work. But whenever I see him, I'm still, you know, respectful, you know, wear my mask, try to keep my distance if I can. So that's about it, though. I mean, for Labor Day weekend, I saw some of my family that lives down in Texas. I went to go see them. I couldn't fly because Texas was on the no-fly list for us. And but I needed to go see my family. I hadn't seen them in forever. And to me, my aunt that lives down there in Dallas and my cousins down there, they're like my brothers and sisters. You know, she's like my mom. So I had to see them. I hadn't seen them in a long time. For sure, multiple months, like maybe since last Thanksgiving. It'd been a while. So I had to go see them. So I drove down there, went to go see them, stayed with them for a little bit, and took all the necessary precautionary measures, gloves, masks, you know, stayed distance away, and try to stay in contact as much as you can. You know, like I said, whenever you want to, just call somebody. 5 minutes in the car. Hey, how you doing? Just checking in. That's most of how we check on each other. So.
What was it like when you went down to visit them?
Oh, it was great. I went down for my cousin Rashid's birthday. His birthday, he's 4 months younger than me. So we're both 95 babies. And he had no idea I was coming. But everybody else knew. And it had been planned because I had bought a ticket. And I bought a ticket back to go see them, I think in June or July. But then we got an update from my administration at school saying Texas is on the no-fly list. You can't fly there. Like, okay, so I'll just cancel the flight. I'll get a flight voucher for it, and I'll drive. It wasn't a big deal. So I left Friday after work and drove down there 12 hours and then showed up 5, and then he's up. Everybody's up. Everybody's there. He's, wait a second. Knock on the door, walk in. Everybody's like, oh, okay, here we go. And then he just – the smile on his face, he lit up and he was like, where'd you come from? I was like, I think I took a wrong turn somewhere. Ended up in Dallas. So it was great. You know, we spent 2 days with them, came back, and we had that Monday off, of course, because it was Labor Day. So it was a federal holiday. So I came back, and I was fortunate enough that I got to do that because we did not go do anything in public. Yeah. He's immunocompromised. So, you know, that's why I was going to wear a mask anyway, but even more so because he's immunocompromised, he's wheelchair bound, kept my distance, kept my mask on at all times. Even when I was eating further away from them just so I would, you know, expose them less to of a risk, because there's only so much that you can do, but you try to do what you can. But it was still great. You know, it's too short, 24 hours on the road for 2 days. I mean, it's a stark undertaking. That's 1600 miles, I think, just under 1600 miles I drove, but it's okay. It was worth it. I hadn't seen them in forever. I wanted to see them. So it was a great time.
You mentioned that you haven't seen your mom or your brother very much in person since like February. What is that like? How did y'all used to see each other more often before that?
I lived at home. This is the first time living alone. And it's just because I was going through college. In my culture, you don't really leave the house until you're approaching marriage or getting married. I think I'm approaching that age for marriage, but I'm not engaged or otherwise betrothed at the moment. So me leaving in January was, we had known it was a coming thing, but I pulled the trigger on that a little earlier just for various reasons. But so we were around each other all the time. I mean, I was working a lot, of course, even while I was living at home with them. But still got to see them more often. You know, we still got to go out, take my brother bowling, or we would go get some ice cream or go watch a movie or just go out, you know, take a walk, go ride bikes, something like that. And I've seen them sporadically since February, but that's like me stopping by to pick something up. Hey, mom made dinner. You know, hey, stop by, come pick up dinner. I don't really count that. You know, this is like a catch-up session. Like, oh, hey, what are you doing? Oh, yeah, I'm just working. Anything new? Nope. Okay. Like on to the next small topic, you know, conversation. It's not really quality time that you would otherwise spend with, that you would like to spend with your family. And I think we're losing that for sure. But I think generally staying in contact, like with Alan, like I said, sometimes he'll be like, Dennis, come please play video games with me. Please play video games with me. And I'll find, okay, Alan. Okay. I'll find some time. We'll play video games together. And that helps. You know, me and him stay in contact. That's part of the reason why I even still have video games, because of him. And then with my mom, like I'll call her, she'll call me, and we'll stay in contact that way. And then sometimes I'll stop by, pick up dinner, or whatever.
Yeah. You said you're still working on through grad school also?
Mm-hmm. I'm working on my second master's right now.
Okay. In what?
It's my master's in teaching.
Okay.
Yeah. Master's in teaching, specifically post-secondary education.
Okay. High school. Are you doing it here at Western, or how's that going?
It's going. I mean, it's my last real semester of coursework. This semester I have my last two real classes. The next semester it's like your, I forget what it's called, but it's like an internship almost, even though I'm already working. I already have a job. So just who your professors and your advisors just come check on you, make sure that you're doing well. And it's like a 6-hour course. Mm. I'm like, okay. So I'm slated to graduate in May. So yeah, it'll be it there. And then we'll see about the next steps after that, PhD or educational doctorate, I had a PhD position that was offered to me when I was doing my first master's, but I turned it down to do education. But I'm still thinking that I want to do something higher ed beyond, whether it's go back into academia or potentially maybe do administration at one point, or maybe just stay in the classroom, but acquire a higher skill set, a higher degree of knowledge for these things. So I'll make that decision. I'm planning on doing it. It's just where I'm doing it. It's a huge financial consideration. I've never paid a penny in my life for school. I've been very fortunate to have scholarships and grants. I've never paid a penny for school, and I'd like to think that I'm pretty successful based on that. I've also never paid interest. So student loans, the idea of student loans are kind of frightening to me.
Yeah.
And so we'll see. Part of the reason I didn't do medical school or PhD school is just because how long it was going to take, how much debt I was going to have. And for medical school, it was mostly work-life balance. It was like, man, 80 hours a week, yikes. Malpractice insurance, yikes. PhD school was, okay, by the time that you really finish in your field in cellular molecular biology, you might be 35 after you finish your postdoctoral fellowships and get like 7 publications. But then you have to find somewhere to work, and it's highly competitive. So good luck with that. And with my girlfriend, with her living in Florida, me wanting – and her wanting to leave for Florida and, you know, settle around. It doesn't have to be Kentucky, but somewhere where the cost of living is not nearly as high and you don't have to worry about nearly as many natural disasters. Mm-hmm. The crime rate is very low and these things, it's like, well, where will you end up? You never know in academia. So teaching was very attractive, partly because I loved teaching in grad school. I loved anatomy. I loved biology. I loved being around the pre-professional students. And that's what really spurned it. I was like, wow, I can really... I dig this. This is great. And that's what I was like, well, you know what? Let me see if I can affect the younger kids as well. And I had a great experience at South Warren. And then so far, I think we're starting to get there this year. It's taking longer because they've only been in school, like I said, for 10 days. But whereas I've been there for 5 weeks. But we're getting there slowly. Those environments are going to be built. That classroom discourse is going to be built. And we'll get there, and we'll be able to, you know, provide some structure and some support and some positive effect in those kids' lives. And so it's very rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Is the pandemic, is the reality of what life is like now, has that affected how you plan for your future, whether in education or otherwise?
Not in a very large sense. I 100% believe that this period in our history will be studied for decades to come in basically every single discipline that there is. For me, I guess it depends on, one, in terms of academia, if the positions are available, just because if you look at BLS data, depending on the field that you go into, sometimes, you know, if it's this sector of public education and academia, maybe the jobs are dropping precipitously, or maybe they're holding steady, or maybe in one state there's some growth, tenure projections, there's some growth. So it just depends. I think one thing that's always needed for Kentucky specifically is high school science teachers who are males in particular. And so I'm in a good position there, especially with my content knowledge. I have certifications in multiple content areas. And so I think that's job security for me. So, you know, do I forego job security and pursue higher title and perhaps a more volatile career path that is maybe adjuncting or having a year-to-year contract, or do I wait and just acquire tenure here and just be content with what I am? You know, so COVID is not really affecting that all too much. Something I wish that the universities were doing would be to affect and look at their tuition charges when everything is going to be directly digital and you know it's digital. Are you still using your campus grounds? Are you still paying the faculty the same way? Are you still using the facilities and the electricity and all this other stuff? Are you still be able to justify that cost? Or are you just padding your bottom line? So what's factoring in for me right now is it's like I'm deciding between Western for my educational doctorate or Vanderbilt. Well, that is a huge, huge difference in tuition. Vanderbilt's like $110,000 and Western I think is like 40 or 50. So it's a big difference. And for me, being accepted into undergraduate school at Vanderbilt,
and decided not to go, to stay home so I could take advantage of, advantageous position here in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. It's always kind of like that what if in the back of my head, you know, like if I had done this, what would my life have turned out like, or where would I be? Who would I have met? I don't know.
Yeah.
But we'll see. It's not really changed it all that much. I mean, I guess in terms of life planning, it's not ideal to start thinking about planning or prepping a wedding or even maybe an engagement if this stuff is still going on. Yeah. Like my buddy Elvis, he's engaged. They've been planning a wedding throughout this entire pandemic, but they've had to shift their plans because they'd already had their venue. They had already booked it and you know, had their guest list for people that they were going to invite before it really got bad. Yeah. Then it gets bad and now you have to trim everything down and worry about social distancing and wearing masks and how do we do this? How do we do that? So that's not ideal. So maybe that's delayed a little bit. I don't know. We'll see how long it lasts. I'm skeptical that, the end is in sight, but, I don't think it's affected it all that much though. Not really. You try to kind of, things you can control, you try to control. Anything else that you can't control, you kind of just have to go with the flow.
Why are you skeptical that the end is in sight?
Well, if you believe what our president would have you believe, the vaccines are coming and that they're going to be excellent. I'm skeptical because emergency use authorizations by the FDA, historically, even though you have a high degree of success with some of those drugs that have been approved, it's not usual for vaccines. Mm-hmm. Vaccines, rightfully so, should have a higher degree of proof. The body of evidence that you need to acquire for vaccines needs to be substantially higher than for drugs. And if you're doing emergency use authorizations, maybe in select cases it makes sense, but for mass distribution worldwide, I'm skeptical. I want to see what the evidence and what the data tells us. Once you start doing clinical trials beyond just 1,000 people, what does it tell you for 10,000 people? Differentiate your sample size, differentiate your populations. Then I want to see what the data says. Don't tell me that it works in these 1,000 people that you selectively picked. I want to see what the data says when you randomly sample population, you know, and then you do your differential statistics and you see what's going on the right way, not just let me push this through for political motives on either side. I'm a registered independent. Yeah. So I don't mean to, you know, sound like I'm pushing a political agenda there, but I'm very, very skeptical that, you know, and even the who was it just this week when it came out, was it the chairman, I forget his title, of the CDC, doctor for 30 years, Harvard educated, you know, CV as long as the Nile River, says highly skeptical that we'll have a viable vaccine for mass distribution before April. The counter argument to that is, yeah, we'll have it in November. Telling people that is not the greatest thing in the world, man. You're not setting yourself up for success there, you know. So by the time you get it distributed, my experience in research has been you plan it and you plan it and you plan it and things will go wrong. So if your time course is let's be done by December, you can probably anticipate it'll be done by March or February or something like that, because things are going to happen that you can't control, that you can't predict. You're going to have some degree of attrition. You're going to have some degree of unpredictability in your sample size that you could not control for. And you have to roll with it and then redo the statistics and then redo the writing and then try to get it approved once again and get it verified, get it peer reviewed, and then get it FDA approved. So I don't know. I like to think that the data is currently telling us that we're having higher degrees of positive cases, but fewer cases of mortality. Mm-hmm. It seems to be that the virus has become so pervasive in our states and our day-to-day lives that the people who have gotten the sickest potentially have already gotten sick. The ones who otherwise would have been, you know, substantially affected in a negative way have otherwise already been substantially affected that way. So maybe you and I get sick, but you and I don't have the adverse reactions that someone else may have, regardless of what age they are. So I think, you know, the current stats are 80% of all COVID cases recover just fine. Even if you're positive, your immune system, 80% of cases will do exactly what it's supposed to be.
doing, fight off that virus. And 20% of those times, though, that's where you have some issues. And I think within that subset of people, we have seen what the epidemiologists are telling us is that a lot of those people have already gotten sick. And so we may see positive cases increase because we're opening up and people are being more and more lax with the masks and the cleaning and the distancing, but just less severe cases, fewer severe cases. So, but I'm still, I don't know. We'll see how this all plays out. Once we finally get some concrete data about how these vaccines are doing, I think we have four now that are in phase three, four vaccine trials that are in phase three. And so we'll see how they do. They're looking for candidates. I think the one that I saw today was looking for 60,000 candidates, which is about right for a vaccine. Yeah, ideally you'd have a bigger number if you could, but you want the burden of proof to be substantially high for something that is going to be, that is a, it's not an acute treatment. It's something that is longitudinal. So you want it to be significantly higher.
Yeah. Talking about looking forward and trying to predict what's going to happen next. What about for you? Is there anything that you are still looking forward to right now?
So it's funny that we have this conversation today because as we've talked about so far, you know, the various aspects of this conversation, personal and, you know, my girlfriend's actually flying in tonight. Yeah. So I'm going to go pick her up tonight. Her flight lands right around 9 o'clock in Nashville. So I'm going to drive down there, pick her up. And then she'll be tired because she worked today and I've got stuff to do for school later on tonight. So I'll drop her off at the hotel. I'll come home and I'll pass out. Then I'll go to work tomorrow. And then she's here for our senior night. We have our senior night tomorrow night. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. Hopefully we have a good senior night. And so I get to take her to that. Looking forward to the weekend. Going to take her zip lining at Red River Gorge because it's now open. Praise. That'll be fun. And looking forward to my buddy's wedding. Elvis is getting married here in October, somewhere nearby in Bowling Green. So that'll be fun. Looking forward to Thanksgiving and being around my family, seeing them responsibly, of course. That'll be fun. Looking forward to graduating, you know, looking forward to just the next steps in life, you know, looking forward to being able to just say, I'm going to take a step back and not worry about this bill or that bill. I'm going to take a excursion. I'm just going to say everything's on freeze and I'm gone for 4 weeks. Don't talk to me. Disconnect the phone. I'm going backpacking, you know, or something like that. It'd be lovely to do, you know, something like that, just to not have to worry about the next routine thing in life that society tells us that we have to do. You know, you have to grow up, you have to go to school, or you have to get a job, and you have to get a mortgage, and you have to have a family, and these things over and over and over again that are just iterative about something that's not, you know, looking forward to something like that, like an adventure like that. So, yeah, just looking forward to the next conversation like this, you know, seeing how people are doing and getting my perspective in, getting other person's perspective in. So things to look forward to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for talking with me. You've been so generous with your experiences and your perspective and really appreciate it. Really, really grateful. Figure we should, I don't want to take up too much of your afternoon here, especially because you got to get ready for your girlfriend coming to visit. But do you feel like there's anything that's important that you want to share that we haven't talked about yet?
Related to education, I think the biggest one, once again, is just harping as much as we can to try and control, or not maybe control, to try to get students to develop those critical analysis and reasoning skills. I mean, that's the biggest one. That's where I feel like we're going to suffer the most, because it is so easy to consume information today, and it's so hard to know if it's good information or not. So everybody's got an opinion. Mm-hmm. Everybody's got an opinion. And they're so adamant about their opinions, even if they're dead wrong. That's my thing, is I want to try to be able to get this generation of kids at least on the right track. So by the time that they get, if they get to college, that they're not completely hopeless. And if they don't go to college, which most of them won't, just because I think, what, 20% of America is college educated. Is that right? Something like that.
Yeah.
Even if they don't and they end up being, you know, our service workers of some sort, that they still have a way to digest information and not just think, oh, I'm dumb or I'm stupid or I can't understand that. No, like you have a process that you can follow. You can follow this process and it can help you digest this information. It's not too complex for you. So that's my thing is I think that that should be the goal of education this year is to try to get students and teach them how to think. They're going to lose content. There's no way that they don't. They'll lose thermodynamics. You know, they'll lose nuclear chemistry. They won't get to learn that this year. But can I teach them how to think? Can I teach them how to be people? You know, can I teach them how to confide in one another and be social, not just be in the screen the entire time? That's what I think we need to focus on this year and beyond. I mean, not just this year. I mean, the next few years, just in general, as an educational body, is how do we get people to remember how to be people and not plugged into a screen 24/7. That's really it.
Right. I think that's a wonderful way to end. Wonderful way to end the conversation. Thank you so much again. I've really enjoyed talking to you. This has been great. Hope you've had a decent time too. Yeah. Thank you. Congratulations on your graduation coming up in May, and good luck with everything. Hope you have a nice visit with your girlfriend this weekend. And yeah.
Thank you very much. And I wish you luck with everything that you're doing here. How much do you have left to finish?
I'm in my second year of a master, so I'll graduate in May too. Everything.
Well, there you go. Maybe we'll walk the line. Well, I don't know how that's going to work.
Right. Commencement. We'll have to see. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But you got a good team that you're around. Brent's excellent.
Yeah.
He's excellent. I don't know how much he's told you about the stuff that we worked on in the past, but I have nothing but high things to say about Brent and Virginia. She was there before, but you knew Virginia.
Yeah.
But you had the entire team and Dr. Farrell and Dr. Horrigan, excellent, excellent anthropologists and folklorists. So yeah, I mean, you're surrounded by great people.
Yeah. Really lucky to have all of them. Definitely. Thank you very much. You can get that, release signed just whenever you get a chance. I will be in touch.
Definitely, Ellie. I don't have a scanner at home. It has to be physically signed, right?
I think so. Let me double check with Sarah at Kentucky Oral History on that, and I'll let you know. I think that it does. But the rest of the form, you can type in it. So I think you can fill out the rest of the information online.
Then what I'll do is I'll send it to you tomorrow once I get back to school so I can use the scanner at school, and then I'll email it to you tomorrow.
Okay, that sounds great. Thank you.
No problem. Hey, have a good one.
You too. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.